This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Manawatu People's Radio presents the first episode of our serial, A Respectable Veneer, written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press, and narrated by Romy Hooper. This narration was made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust, with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. Set in 1954 New Zealand, the story follows single mother Ruby as she struggles to reinvent herself in a new town, determined to provide her 10-year-old daughter Edie with a respectable life. We do have a content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. But A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage.
A Respectable Veneer by Rachel Doré. 1954, Palmerston North. Ruby woke when the rattle of the train changed pitch. Perhaps they'd crossed a bridge. Soon the clacking rhythm steadied. She closed her eyes again. It was too late. Sleep had been dropped somewhere back up the line. Her hip was cramped. The arm she had around her sleeping daughter was numb. As she flexed her legs, she was sharply reminded of the blister on her heel. Stupid of her to wear good shoes for the dash to the station. There had been just enough time to step out of her evening gown, have a quick wash and get into day clothes. No time for decisions. The journey from Auckland seemed interminable. As Edie stirred and opened her eyes, Ruby straightened. Standing up to stretch was out of the question without drawing attention to herself. She leaned back. From the carriage window, the two of them watched the scenery change. Bushland and steep hillsides of blackened stumps were left behind. The train chuffed past slopes bristling with young pine. Paddocks of farm animals and hay sheds were seen straight out of a children's book. A woman wearing an army greatcoat over her apron trudged behind a line of cows. A boy carried a bucket to a gate. Drifts of smoke from a chimney veiled a line of dark trees in the background. Edie waved at an old man who lifted his arm as the train passed his paint-bare house. Then there were timber mills, worksheds, the odd homestead with an orchard. More swards of green.
"A palomino!" cried Edie. "Mum, did you see?"
Ruby pressed her shoulders against the back of the seat. Edie had been pointing out horses ever since farmland came into view. It was just as well she'd slept some of the way. Now Ruby wanted to settle back into the cradling rhythm and the blank calm that soothed her.
"A mansion!"
Edie's squeal rent Ruby's hope of peace.
"A real mansion! Oh, Mum, you missed it!"
She hadn't missed the grand old place. It was glimpsed over trees, with verandas garlanded with some sort of climber, the foliage thinning in the grip of autumn. Half a picture, half seen, half imagined, gone in a flash.
"You should have looked," said Edie. "It was enormous. It probably had 70 rooms at least." "Shush!"
Ruby glanced at the bemused faces of fellow passengers and yanked Edie's herringbone coat.
"Sit down and be quiet."
Before long, Edie was standing at the window again. She returned the salute of a gaggle of children standing by the tracks. The train rumbled past a cluster of modest houses, timber-framed stockyards and tin sheds. More paddocks, more animals. Ruby closed her eyes.
"Glaxo," said Edie. "What's Glaxo?"
"That building."
"That's where baby milk comes from, I suppose." Ruby twisted her neck to see, but it was behind them already. Edie frowned and leaned back on her seat, pensive for a moment. Then she was back at the window. A few old houses nestled next to sheds near the railway line. There were gravel driveways, big storage tanks, Atlantic, Caltex. They had reached the town outskirts. Swarms of men on bicycles left workyards, and cars of various vintages streamed onto the road. Men with homes to go to. Most likely they'd go to the pub first, to get a jug of beer in before 6 o'clock closing time.
"Look at that," Edie said. "Two steamrollers and trucks full of dirt. What are they doing?"
Ruby clenched her teeth. The train rattled on.
"Oh, they're wrecking that place there."
Edie had her finger on the glass.
"What were they doing that for?"
"For goodness sake, be quiet and get your fingers off the window," said Ruby. "You'll get yourself all dirty."
"Mum, shops!" Edie squealed. "Look!"
Ruby grabbed her daughter before she crossed the carriage to get another view through the opposite window. In truth, Ruby was just as interested to see the place, but she couldn't allow Edie to show her up like that, behaving like an unruly rapscallion.
"Sit down and behave."
She pulled Edie's coat again and gave her a shake. Edie plopped herself back on the seat with a sour frown. Wide, flat roads on each side of the train line were banked with business premises of every kind. Edwardian buildings sat alongside more modern ones, old wooden shops and others with ornate plaster frontages pressed shoulder to shoulder under verandas, and hotels as substantial as any to be found in Auckland. The train slowed and chuffed through the town square with its rotunda, fountain and flower gardens. So it was true. The railway line really did run through the centre of the town. Carriage windows were shut against clouds of soot as the train slowed with a screech and rattle. Passengers began to shift in their seats as the train neared the station. Men straightened their ties and donned their hats. Young women took out their compacts to see whether their makeup needed repairing and primped their hair. As the train groaned to a stop, people pulled bags and suitcases down from overhead luggage racks.
"Are we here?" asked Edie.
"This is it," said Ruby. "Palmerston North."
"Oh, I'm glad,"
Edie cupped her hand to whisper.
"I need to wee."
Ruby groaned. "Why didn't you go when I took you back on the train before?" As much as she loved her daughter, there were times.
"Oh, come on then."
She refused to allow herself to limp as she pushed through people on the busy platform to get Edie into the ladies' restroom. As soon as a cubicle door swung open, Ruby bundled herself and Edie into it. When they had finished, Ruby thrust Edie ahead of her and elbowed her way through the women and girls clustered in front of the mirrors. At the sinks, she dampened her hanky to give Edie's face a fierce polish.
"That's better."
Ruby lifted Edie's chin with her thumb and turned the flawless face this way and that, looking for a smut she might have missed.
"Come along, chicken."
The station platform was clouded with soot-laden steam. Someone bumped into Ruby's shoulder, and instinctively she snatched Edie's wrist.
"Don't pull, Mum."
Edie rubbed her eye with a knuckle.
"Hurry up," Ruby said. "I want to get past this lot. Keep close."
She hauled Edie through the jostling scrum that spilled out of the station onto the roadside. People were already strung along the curb, waiting for traffic to pass. A fellow risking a crossing with a large suitcase was narrowly missed by a car. The afternoon had chilled. The sooner they got to the hotel, the better. Peering across the road between the parked and passing vehicles, she spotted the side street she needed. A youth with a guitar strapped to his back lugged a duffel bag, dodged cars and bicycles to reach a woman who was watching him with her hand over her mouth. A short tide of people followed in his wake, some of them making for one of the hotels on the other side of the road. Young men made a show of sauntering into the traffic that did not stop. Others escorted girlfriends, crossing zigzag fashion to avoid getting hit. Older men left gossiping wives to fend for themselves eager for a quick beer before the pubs closed. Horns tooted, louts shouted. Ruby hunched her shoulders inside her coat and tightened her grip on Edie's hand, ready to make a dash. Edie laughed as a gust of wind lifted someone's hat, spinning it into the path of an old spoke-wheel Ford, and a klaxon horn sounded. A sleek sedan swerved. A woman on a bicycle wobbled dangerously close to a truck carrying a large pig in a wooden crate. Quick! Ruby pulled Edie as they crossed. A slice of air whipped at her coat as a car passed behind them. Did you see that truck with the pig on the back? Said Edie when they reached the other side. Yes, I did. The Railway Hotel, said Edie. Is that where we're going? No, come on. Miles back, just before the last time she'd dozed off, Ruby had asked a fellow passenger if there were any affordable private hotels near the railway station. The woman couldn't recall the name of the place, and the directions were vague. There are any number of places, but if you want cheap, look for the next street along, past the Masonic and past the Railway Hotel. Down David Street it is. You'll see it. Now, in the ebbing light, Edie dragged her feet as they passed the warm noise of the corner hotel and down the side street. A white cat shot out from a hedge, making Ruby jump.
A white cat could be good luck, said Edie.
I bloody well hope so. As far as Ruby was concerned, luck had always been a pretty slim straw to clutch at. But never bank on luck, she added grimly. The smell of food cooking wafted across the street.
I'm bloody starving, Edie groaned.
Ruby swatted at her daughter's shoulder. Stop swearing. I keep telling you. I won't have you talking like a gutter snipe.
I'm cold and I'm starving, Edie whined. It's been hours and hours since I had that pie.
Oh, do stop grizzling, said Ruby, pausing to ease the pain in her foot. You're not a baby. You know, if you carry on behaving like one at 10 years of age, people will say you're a halfwit. Now come along, we're nearly there.
Where?
Said Edie. Answering was more trouble than it was worth.
Do you know you've got a ladder? Edie said. And there's blood.
Ruby stopped and twisted around to peer at her ruined stocking and the state of her heel.
Damn. I must look a sight. I suppose my hair's a mess, too.
Strands of untamed, tawny hair tickled her face, and she tried to smooth them behind her ear.
Look, you could wear this.
Edie opened her fist, and a furl of green and rose-coloured material unfolded itself.
Where'd you get that?
My pocket. I didn't pinch it, honestly. I found it on the ground when you went to get the pie. It was just lying there. Someone nearly trod on it.
That was back in Taumarunui.
Ruby held the scarf up by two corners. It's silk. The wind snatched at it. The square of colour seemed to want to lift and escape from her fingers.
I looked around, but there wasn't anybody looking for it, said Edie.
You should have handed it in.
You said I had to stay by the ticket office and not go anywhere, and not talk to anybody.
Edie shrugged.
And the man was busy. Anyhow, it's finders keepers.
Ruby clicked her tongue. Starting a new life meant teaching her daughter the finer points of right and wrong, lessons she'd hardly needed in the warren of Freeman's Bay's back streets. Right now, there were more important priorities. And the scarf was lovely.
Go on, put it over your hair, said Edie. You'll look like a film star in a magazine.
Ruby knotted the scarf under her chin and kissed the top of her daughter's head. Don't talk rubbish.
There, just like in a magazine.
Edie slipped her fingers into her mother's gloved hand. Ruby's reply was the return of two gentle squeezes with her thumb on the narrow hand. A signal, assuring Edie that Ruby loved her. Come on.
The words Arcadia House were above the door. Ruby looked down the short street, deciding against taking another step. "This has to be it," she said. A recent plaster-clad frontage had been added to an extension on an older wooden building, in a failed attempt to make it look modern. The place looked more seedy than welcoming. Still, it looked cheap all right. The wind blew the smell of train down the street after them, and when she pulled the door back, she had the sense they were being blown into the place. Inside, the air was dense with the smell of boiled mutton, hot dripping and overcooked cabbage, with a background note of fresh paint and cigarette smoke. Still, at least it was warm. A man leaned, stood in front of an empty office, two suitcases at his feet. He tipped his hat when he saw them. Ruby averted her eyes.
Someone will be along soon, he said. I rang the bell.
Edie peered down the carpeted passage. A yellow-haired woman with a crooked-toothed smile appeared from one of the rooms and went behind the office counter.
Welcome back, Mr. Woods, she cooed, as she flapped open a faded registry book and marked a page. Lovely to see you.
The fuss you make, Mrs. Thompson, Mr. Woods said. I've only been up country for a couple of days.
You know, she said, I have to keep track of comings and goings, Mr. Woods.
He removed his hat, deferring to Ruby and Edie.
Now, now, Mrs. Thompson, attend to these ladies first.
The woman raised penciled eyebrows.
Well, in town for a little time away, are we?
Ruby knew this Mrs. Thompson was looking for the cases they didn't have. She knew when she was being looked down upon, probably judged to be escaping from a dreadful marriage. If only she knew.
Something like that, Ruby decided to say.
A repertoire of lies sat on her tongue, ready for questions. Mrs. Thompson's eyes followed Edie, who wandered off down the corridor, nosing in doorways.
Your child, is she?
She spread her lump-knuckled hand on the page.
Yes.
The smile dropped.
I'm sorry, dearie. We don't have children here. Anyway, if your husband comes after you, we won't brook any trouble.
He won't. I mean, he... Ruby put her hand to her chest and lowered her head. In the state she was in, it was easy to adopt a tone of sadness, giving clout to the unspoken untruth that now stretched between them. Mrs. Thompson pursed her lips.
I suppose the child goes to school.
Her school's closed, said Ruby. Polio. The older woman's eyes widened. Mr. Woods leaned backwards to look down the passage where Edie had disappeared.
It's going around Auckland again.
Ruby stopped there. A lie is best kept simple. Mrs. Thompson gave Edie a sidelong look.
Auckland, eh?
May holidays start next week anyway, so I thought, said Ruby, wanting to close off any further need for discussion.
Well,
Mrs. Thompson clicked her tongue, sniffed and shook her head.
Families used to come in from out of town and stop here, but that was back when it was a private hotel. All that stopped in 1941, just permanence now. There's a place up round the corner. Might suit you better.
Ruby couldn't let herself be scuttled so soon. She stood her ground. Edie reappeared and slipped her arm around her mother's waist, leaning into the big coat.
Excuse me for butting in.
Mr. Woods stepped over his suitcases, throwing one end of his scarf over his shoulder.
Mrs. Thompson, I know you're a lady with a heart. What about making an exception this time? It's getting late, and the kiddie looks hungry. Why not let them have Betty's room while she's down in Foxton?
Oh, I wouldn't like to do that.
Mrs. Thompson cast Ruby a sour look.
Betty will be down with her grandchildren for a while yet, he said. Eh? What about it, Mrs. Thompson?
Did he flutter his eyelashes?
Or you can give them my room, he added. It wouldn't hurt for me to go to the commercial for a change.
No, 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 Mr. Woods. Let's see.
Mr. Woods smacked his thigh with his hat, then pushed it back into shape. You're a trooper, Mrs. Thompson.
He was smooth, this Mr. Woods. Ruby thought he couldn't be much older than herself. Handsome, with sandy hair, brill-creamed slick, neatly parted on one side. He caught Ruby's stare and smiled. Her face heated.
It's irregular, Mrs. Thompson glared, faltering.
One night, is it? Ruby was emptied out. At that moment, anything would do. The series of brief naps on the train hardly counted as rest. Now she felt ill. She clutched the counter to steady herself. Mrs. Thompson frowned and glanced over at Mr. Woods, who smiled encouragingly.
Very well, she said. But only till Friday. Betty'll be back, then you'll have to find somewhere else.
She pushed the book towards Ruby and tapped the page. Ruby wrote, Mrs. R. Barton and daughter, showing off an almost perfect copperplate hand.
Well, Mrs. Barton, Mrs. Thompson said. The room's 12 shillings and 6 pence a night. I assume you'll be wanting meals as well?
Ruby nodded and opened her purse.
That'll be an extra 5 shillings since there's two of you, said Mrs. Thompson. It's 2 meals, breakfast and dinner in the evening. Everyone sorts out their own lunch.
Ruby drew a breath between her teeth. More than £3 gone. Still, it was what things cost, but it made her queasy to part with any of what little she had. She watched Mrs. Thompson eye each note and coin as she placed them on the counter.
And 6 pence, prompted Mrs. Thompson, while Ruby was still fishing in her coin purse for 2 threepences. The room's a single, mind. You won't mind bunking in with your little girl, will you?
Ruby would bet another half-crown Betty and Foxton had already paid for the room. She was too tired and footsore to argue.
I'm sorry to have to ask, she said, but are there any towels?
One of Mrs. Thompson's penciled eyebrows arched.
Towels? This isn't the Grand, you know.
She slapped a tagged key on the register.
Up the stairs, Mrs. Barton, number 9. Bathroom's at the end of the corridor. There's a roller towel in there for everybody, and one in the ladies' WC next to that. Dinner's in 30 minutes. If you're not there, you'll miss out.
When Ruby turned, Mr. Woods had gone.
You've been listening to the first episode of A Respectable Veneer, a novel by Rachel DeRay, serialized and read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday. You can also find the show on demand at npr.nz/show/respectableveneer or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you get your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.